might not be aware, today we are continuing in Maseches Megillah, which we started a number of weeks ago. And the basic overview of the Masechta, just to get ourselves back into the scheme of things, is we first talk about the mitzvah of Mikra Megillah, exactly which day everybody's supposed to read the Megillah. Then the Gemara talks about Simchas Purim and the obligation that we have to be Misameach. Then the mitzvah of Mishlach Matos, Matanos Lev Yonim. The Gemara also talks about all the various aspects, the details of how we darshan the Megillah and what the story was all about. And Agav, the story about Mikra Megillah and about reading with a minyan, the Torah, the Gemara also discusses the din of Beis HaKnesses and getting people together in a shul, because that's where the Megillah is laying, Berovam Hadras Melech, and we have a lot of halachas that we need to get to, but the only way to get there is if we first get past Daf Beis. We spoke about the fact that the first Mishnah tells us that we have a discrepancy between various cities as to when exactly they are expected to lay in the Megillah. So some cities, we said, are referred to as Prazim, and some cities are referred to as Mukafin. Mukafin means when you have a city that is a walled city, and Prazim means any city that is a non-walled city. So the Gemara that we're going to learn tonight expands on that idea and figures out exactly how do we know from the Psukim when the Prazim are supposed to read. I'm sorry, when the Mukafin are supposed to read the Megillah, and that's what we're going to focus on this evening. Just want to remind everybody, we have another shiur that will take place at 10 o'clock in the Ashkenaz house, 10 o'clock to 10:30. And that was a great group of guys last week and a great shiur. Tonight the shiur is going to focus on why is there no din of Sveika Diyoma when it comes to Hanukkah, the same way there's a din of Sveika Diyoma when it comes to Sukkot and Pesach and Shavuos throughout the year. So that's a coming attraction, 10 o'clock, but let's first get through our shiur at 9. So here we are in the middle of the discussion where the Gemara talks about how do we know which city is supposed to lay in when. So we turn to Beis Amid Beis, where we have the Gemara says by the two dots, why we refer to it as two dots instead of a colon, I don't exactly know, but that's the minig. So the Gemara says, Minah Hanimili. How do we know that when you have Krachin Hamukafin Chama Mimos Yeshua Ben Nun? How do we know when you have a city that is a walled city from the days of Yeshua Ben Nun? How do we know that they read on the 15th of Adar? So let's just read the psukim carefully that I gave out in order that we could familiarize ourselves with what exactly we're dealing with. And the Gemara is going to extrapolate from all of these psukim exactly when each city is supposed to read. So let's make sure we read them carefully. Says the pasuk in the very end of the Megillah, Al Kain, therefore, after the whole story of the Purim miracle took place, and now Mordechai says, we should write this down, and Esther says, Kisvuri the Doros, I want this to become part of the Tanakh. So it says, Al Kain HaYehudim HaPrazim, HaYoshvim Ba'arei HaPrazos, and as we just said, the Prazim are the cities that are non-walled cities. So all those Jews who are living in the non-walled cities, Osim Es Yom Arba Asar L'Chodesh Adar, they make a great simcha, a great celebration on the 14th day of Adar, Simcha u'mishteh v'yamtov u'mishlach manos ish l'reyehu. So the Torah says that on the 14th day of Adar is the day that all the non-walled cities make a celebration, and that celebration is comprised of a mishteh, a yamtiv. Everyone's supposed to be festive, and he's supposed to send mishlach manos to each other. Now, that's one thing that you have to highlight, that here it says on the 14th day of Adar is when it's supposed to be celebrated. Then we keep reading, and it seems to be that there's a different time. Vayichtov Mordechai Sadvarim Ha'ele, Mordechai Atzadik writes down these words, Vayishlach Svarim Al Kol HaYehudim Asher B'chol Midinos HaMelech Achashverosh, and Mordechai sends this edict out to all the Jews living in all communities, HaKrovim V'Harachokim, not only to those who are living with him in Shushan, but he sends out the message to all the Jews who are living everywhere. L'Kayim Aleim Lio Sosim Es Yom Arba Asar L'Chodesh Adar, Ve'eis Yom Chamisha Asar Bo B'chol Shana V'Shana. Hey, so what just happened? The first pasuk that we read said that we have decided now, in order to commemorate the great miracle, we're going to have a special celebration, Yom Mishta V'Simcha Mishlach Manos Ish L'Reyeyum Antanos L'Avionim, great idea, on Yom Arba Asar. All of a sudden you go to number Gimel here and you find that the pasuk, when it recounts the story, says that Mordechai sends out a message that we're going to celebrate on Yom Arba Asar L'Chodesh Adar, Ve'eis Yom Chamisha Asar Bo B'chol Shana V'Shana, on the 14th and the 15th. So what, Purim is supposed to be 2 days? Torah doesn't really explain. Kayamim Asher Nachu Behem HaYehudim HaYaveyem V'chodesh asher nepach lehem yagon l'simcha me'evel yamtev lasos osam, to make those very special days, yimei mishte v'simcha mishlach manos ishlerir matanos avyonim, he writes all of the rules of how one is supposed to conduct himself over this very festive celebration. V'kibel ha'yehudim, and the Jews accepted upon themselves, eis asher hechelu lasos, ve'eis asher kasav Mordechai aleihem. So everybody's very excited to get this letter from Mordechai that says that we're going to now make an official commemoration for the great miracle of Purim. So the Gemara here has an issue, and that is, why does the first pasuk say that we're going to make a commemoration on the 14th, and then the next pasuk says that Mordechai sends out the letter that it's going to be on the 14th and the 15th? Which one is it? So let's begin with the Gemara. It's about 7, 8, maybe 10 lines up from where it gets wide. Minahani mili, how do we know that those cities that are walled cities from the times of Yehoshua ben Nun are supposed to make a celebration on the 15th? How do you know the 15th? Maybe it's supposed to be the 14th. Says the Gemara, Amar Rava, de Amar Kra, because the pasuk says that we just read, Al Kein HaYehudim HaPrazim, the cities that are, again, Prazim means non-walled cities, all the regular cities, HaYoshvim Ba'rei HaPrazos, it says in the first pasuk that we read that all the non-walled cities make a celebration on Yom HaBa'asar, on the 14th day. And therefore, it says the Gemara, Mideprazim Ba'asar, from the fact that all of the non-walled cities read the Megillah and make a celebration on the 14th, it must be that Mukafin, it must be that all the walled cities are Bechamisha Asar, they celebrate on the 15th. Says the Gemara, really, is that true? Ve'ema, maybe I'll tell you differently. Maybe I'll explain the psukim to mean that Prazim Bar Ba'asar, maybe it means that the non-walled cities are the ones who read on the 14th, and Mukafin, the ones that are walled cities, Klal Klal Lo, they don't read the Megillah at all. Now Rashi and the Rishonim are bothered. Why would he have a Havamina that the walled cities shouldn't read the Megillah? If the Chachamim instituted that everybody has to make a great commemoration for the celebration, for the miracle that took place in the times of the Purim story, why would you assume that half of the Jews aren't included in that? Why would there ever be even such a crazy Havamina? Why would he ever say such a thing? So the Rishonim explained the reason why we would have thought that is because the Sakana was not as great in the major cities that were walled cities. The only Sakana was in the far-fledged communities that were living by themselves, that didn't have a fortified city, that weren't able to really protect themselves. That's really where the Sakana was, and therefore we would say they owe the greatest debt of gratitude, and they have to make a celebration. But perhaps the cities that were just walled cities all along and never were really so involved in the great danger that was facing the Jewish people, maybe, says the Gemara, they don't have an obligation at all to make a commemoration for the great miracle of Purim. Says the Gemara, what do you mean? V'lav Yisrael ninu. You're going to tell me that those people who live in those cities aren't Jews? How can you have such a thing where the Chachamim make an institution and it's not geared toward all Jews? It's only to some of them? So even though you have a nice rationale because maybe they weren't Bechlal the Sakana as much as others, but in the end of the day, the Pasuk says over here, how does it say in the first Pasuk we read, Al Kein HaYehudim, therefore the Jews. This was something Mordechai HaTzadik was setting up for all the Jews. And not only that, the next Pasuk says, where is it? It says, Mehodu V'ad Kush. I'm sorry, I didn't put it on here, but one of the Psukim says, Mordechai HaTzadik sends the letter all over the place, Mehodu V'ad Kush, in all the countries and all the communities that the Jews were living, that everybody should celebrate this great miracle that happened on Purim. So what are you going to tell me? All those who are living in the walled cities are not really authentic Jews? How can you say such a thing? The Pasuk here says, Al Kein HaYehudim, therefore all the Jews. So therefore, says the Gemara, this cannot be. Ve'od, and number two, Mehodu V'ad Kush Ksiv. It says that this was going to be a celebration that was going to encompass all communities that span all the way from Hodu V'ad Kush, which means everywhere. So therefore, the Gemara says that is an impossibility. We cannot ever even imagine the Havamina that half of the Jews won't even celebrate Purim at all. There must be a celebration both for those Jews who live in the walled cities and for those Jews who live in the non-walled cities. We just have to figure out exactly how it's going to be done. Says the Gemara. Ve'ema, first word on the line. Maybe, let's try again. Maybe it means Prazim Bar Be'esar. Maybe it means that the non-walled cities read the Megillah on the 14th like the Pasuk explicitly says. And Mukafin Bar Be'esar V'chamesar. Maybe you'll tell me the walled cities, like Shushan Abira, the walled cities are going to have a celebration both on the 14th and on the 15th. And that's why the second pasuk says that we read the Megillah on the 14th and 15th. Maybe that's what it means. Kidechsiv li yoso simes yom arba asr l'chodesh adar v'es yom chamisha asr bo b'chal shana. Says the Gemara, no. That cannot be. It cannot be that you're going to read the Megillah twice on two different days in one community. Why? If the Pasuk would have just said the 14th and the 15th, just going straight in, I would have said that makes sense, that you have to read the Megillah in those cities, both on the 14th as well as on the 15th. But hashta dechsiv, now that it says, the formulation of the Pasuk is, this is the Pasuk in number Gimel, now that the formulation of the Pasuk is, es yom arba asar, vi es yom chamisha asar, asa es u Pasuk. Says the Gemara, we have a rule. If it would have just said the 14th/15th, then that would mean you read the Megillah on both days in those walled cities. However, since the Pasuk says, es yom arba asar, the es yom chamisha asar, since the Pasuk says both, and it stops in between the Pasuk and it says another word, es, that means that obviously we need to read it on the 14th in one place, on the 15th in a different place. It's not meant to be a run-on sentence. Now, you know, the Achronim were all brilliant. And sometimes you don't fully appreciate the comments that the Achronim make. But here, a bunch of Achronim pick up on the same idea. And who are they? The Meshech Chachma has this idea. The Chasam Sofer has the same question. And that is, they come totally out of left field. It's like unbelievable what they extrapolate from an Agadah to Gemara here that's trying to learn out when exactly we're going to read the Megillah. So they extrapolate from here a very important rule. And that is, whenever the Torah says S in the middle of a Pasuk, it means that's not meant to be a run-on sentence. It means you got to stop. Like our Gemara says, S Pasuk. When you have a word S in the middle of a Pasuk, it means that's supposed to be a colon or a comma. So they draw a comparison between our Pasuk here by Mikra Megillah and the Pasuk in Parshas Kisisa. What does it say in Parshas Kisisa? We have a mitzvah in Parshas Kisisa of, again, the Torah in the end of Sefer Shmos is talking all about the construction of the Mishkan. So there in the end of Parshas Kisisa, we have the instruction that the Kohanim are given, that every time they walk into the Beis HaMikdash before performing the Avodah, they have to make sure to wash their hands and feet. So what does the Torah say? Torah says, V'rachatzu Aharon uvanav mimenu. Aharon and his children have to wash their hands and feet from the Kiyar. Es yideihem v'es raglehem. They have to wash both their hands as well as their feet. Rashi comments there on Chumash. What does it mean they have to wash es yideihem v'es raglehem? Rashi says, "Bevas achas hayimekadesh yada v'raglav." So a kohen has to walk into the Beis HaMikdash. He has to put out his hand and his foot at the same time, and I guess turn it on with the other hand. And his hand and his foot have to be washed at the very same time. Says Rashi, "Bekach shanina bizvachim," and this is really the instruction that we are given in the Gemara in Zvachim. Ketzad kiddush yodayim. How is one supposed to do the Kiddush Yodayim when they go into the Beis HaMikdash to perform the Avodah? How is a Kohen supposed to prepare himself? Says the Gemara, Maniach Yado Hayimanas Al Gabi Raglav. He has to put his right hand on top of his right foot, and then with the left hand he turns on the water, and that's the way he's going to be Mekadesh, both his right hand and his right foot at the same time, and then he does the left hand and the left foot at the same time as well. Says the Rashi, quoting Gemara Maseches Vachim, this is the way it needs to be done, because it says you have to wash the hands and feet when you come into the Beis HaMikdash. Now points out the Meshech Chachma and the Chasam Sofer and many other Achronim, what do you mean? Our Pasuk learns over here in our Gemara that whenever the Torah puts in the word S in the middle of a Pasuk, it means that's meant to be a break, that you're supposed to stop in the middle. So he says, if that's really the rule, how does the Gemara in Zvachim tell us the rule in the opposite direction? There the Torah says that a Kohen has to walk in again. What does the Pasuk say? V'rachatzu Aharon uvanav mimenu. Aaron and his children have to wash their hands from the Kiyar. Es yideihem v'es raglehem. I would have said, based on the rule that our Gemara shares, it means they have to wash first their hands and then their feet. That's the rule that our Gemara teaches us, that S always means you stop in the middle. So how do you learn there in the Gemara's Vachim a halacha that's in the opposite direction, that their hands and feet have to be specifically washed at the same time because it says yideihem v'raglehem? What do you mean? But it says S in the middle, that means you stop. So I thought it was a great question. Again, the answer is very technical. Exactly how you understand all the avodah in the Beis HaMikdash and what the rules are over there. But I think the question's an amazing one because it's taking something that I never would have expected to have anything to do with avodah in the Beis HaMikdash, and it's drawing a comparison from our very simple, benign Gemara over here, Maseches Megillah Daf Beis, where the Gemara seems to tell us a very innocent rule, and there they're telling us that it seems not to really be so clear that that is always considered to be the rule. So that's an interesting idea that you find sometimes. Sometimes you read a Gemara, you don't realize what the implication is going to be for a Gemara somewhere else. But what the Achronim teach us here is it can have an implication for something that you would have thought has absolutely no connection at all, and it's something that's important to be aware of. So let's see. First wide line, says the Gemara. So we just read from the fact that the Pasuk says that you have to read the Megillah on the 14th in the Arei HaPrazim, in the non-walled cities. That certainly is what has to be done. Then says the Gemara, how are we going to interpret, how are we going to understand the next Pasuk, where the Pasuk tells us you have to read both on the 14th as well as on the 15th. So now let's go back into our Gemara, where the Gemara says as follows. Hani barba asar v'hani b'chamisha asar. These have to read on the 14th and these on the 15th. V'yema, says the Gemara, maybe I'll tell you a new suggestion. Prazim barba asar. Maybe I'll tell you that the Pasuk says that the non-walled cities have to read on the 14th. But mukafin, when you have a walled city, they have a choice. They can either read on the 14th or on the 15th. It's up to them. If it's more convenient for them one year to read on the 14th, let them do that. If it's more convenient for them that year to read on the 15th, they have that option as well. And that's why the Pasuk says, in the number Gimel, that's why the Pasuk says, that we celebrate on 14 and 15, because the walled cities have an option. Says the Gemara, Amar Kra, the Pasuk says, Bizmanehem, the Megillah has to be read in its proper time. What does it mean, Bizmanehem? Is that on here? What? No, I didn't put it on here. It says that the Megillah has to be read Bizmanehem. This is something that is here. Pasuk, it's the very next Pasuk. I forgot to put it on. L'kayim esimei ha-purim ha-ele Bizmanehem. Everybody took upon themselves to celebrate Purim in their proper time. Kasher kiyam aleihem Mordechai Yehudi ve-Esther Amalka, as they were instructed by Mordechai and Esther on the occasion of the Purim story. So therefore, because the Torah says Bizmanehem, we learn from there, Zmano Shalzeh, lo Zmano Shalzeh. Each one has its own time. If you live in this city, you're going to read on the 14th. If you live in that city, you're going to read on the 15th. Says the Gemara Ve'ema, maybe I'll tell you, Betleisar, maybe I'll tell you that they read on the 13th. Now, where do we come up with that? What? The Mishnah says 13, but who arbitrarily decided 13? So this is a very strange Havamina as well. Whoever said, the Pasuk never says at all, 13, so what exactly does it mean is a good question. Says the Gemara Ve'ema B'Tleisar, maybe it means that they're supposed to read on the 13th. Says the Gemara back, no, Kishusha, that you're supposed to do it the same way they did it in Shushan. And therefore in Shushan, if it says that they're going to read on the 15th, that means all walled cities are going to read on the 15th, and we're not going to let you do it on the 13th. Fine. Ashka Chanasiya, says the Gemara, this is where we learn that you have to do all of the mitzvahs, as it says, that you have to do Mishlach Manos, Matanos Lev Yonim, and you have to have Yimei Mishta V'Simcha. That's how we know all those have to be done either on 14, if you live on a non-walled city, or on 15, if you live in a walled city. However, says the Gemara, Zechira Minalan, how do I know that I'm supposed to actually read the Megillah? How do you know that you have to read the Megillah on the very day when you celebrate with Mishta V'Simcha, Matanos Lav Yonim, Mishlach Manos? How do you know that on that very same day you also have to read the Megillah? That's what we refer to as Zechira. Says the Gemara, Amar Kra, that's because the Pasuk says, V'hayamim ha'ela, and these days nizkarim v'na'asim, which means not only do we have active participation in the day in which we give Mishlach Manos and Matanos Lev Yonim and we have Yimei Mishta V'Simcha and we drink wine and we do whatever we do, but we also have to make sure to be nizkarim v'na'asim. We also have to read the Megillah on that very day as well, and that's a very important part of what the celebration of Purim is all about. Says the Gemara, Iskish Zechira la'asiyah. We learn from there that the same day in which you perform all of your mitzvahs is the day in which you also have to make sure to read the Megillah as well, which poses a little bit of a complication, because sometimes in Eretz Yisrael you have yeshiva bachrim who like to take advantage of the fact that some communities are going to have Purim a day earlier and other communities are going to have Purim a day later. Let's say in Yerushalayim they have Purim on 15th, it's a walled city. But when you have, let's say, Bnei Brak has Purim on the 14th. So we had a lot of guys who I was friendly with who used to go to Bnei Brak on the 14th. By the time they got back on the 15th, they were so drunk already, they wouldn't really be able to listen to the Megillah at night. And they said to themselves, not a problem, I heard the Megillah already. But the Gemara here says you have to have the Asiyah and the Zechira on the same day. So if you decided that you're going to be a Bnei Braker for the day, you have to do all the mitzvahs of Bnei Brak. Not so simple that you can jump back and forth and just decide, you know, based on wherever you find yourself, that that's going to be what determines which day you read on. It really depends where you live. It's an important question in and of itself, because on the other hand, let's say a person jumps back and forth in the other direction. On the 14th day, I'm going to make sure I'm in Yerushalayim. On the 15th, I'm going to make sure I move to Bnei Brak. Then I'm not going to be chayiv at all. So is it, can you imagine such a thing? It doesn't make sense. Obviously, everybody has to observe Purim at some point. So how do we determine where you are? Person can potentially somehow figure out how to get around the whole process by going one day to one city, one day to the other, and then not be mechuyev at all. That's not an option at all. Why? Because really it depends on where you live. Now, if that's true, it means that not only do you have to perform the mitzvah of Mikra Megillah on that day, but you also have to perform Hayamim Ma'ela Nizkarim and Asim. Whichever way we determine you are going to be considered a Ben Ir or a Ben Kfar with regard to the mitzvah of Mikra Megillah is also going to determine whether or not you have performed your mitzvah of Mishlach Manos Matanos Lavyonim and Yimei Mishta V'Simcha. All of those are considered to be a package deal. And either you're going to observe them as the Ben Ir or the Ben Kfar, but you cannot split between both of them, and you certainly cannot figure out how to get yourself around the obligation and not do it at all. So that's a very important question. I remember one of the Achronim talks about, what if a person, there's a big machlokas about the dateline. Nothing to do with Purim, that's a big machlokas about the dateline in general. Where exactly do we draw the dateline? So some Achronim said, it's based on a numerical calculation, and it could go through a landmass. It could cut through a landmass. Another Achronim said, how can you cut through a landmass? That means, if I have 1 foot on this side of the dateline and 1 foot on the other side, potentially a person could do that. That means I'm allowed to do malacha with this hand, but I'm not allowed to do malacha with that hand. How is that possible? It doesn't make sense. So there were those who argued, however you understand the dateline, if a person's going to spend Friday on this side of the dateline, and then at the moment it comes Shkia, they're going to go to the other side of the dateline, is it possible that somebody's not going to have a 7-day period without having a Shabbos at all? You're going to go 14 days without having a Shabbos? Is that possible? So again, these are very important questions that come up, and we assume that we try not to do that. But if a person is ever stuck in that circumstance, it's a very interesting question to figure out. I happen to always get dizzy whenever we talk about dateline issues. There was a guy in YU when I was there. I don't know whatever happened to him, but he was in YU at the time. He was from New Zealand. His name was Jonathan Cohn. And he was a brilliant guy. And at the time, he always was wondering about these dateline issues because for him, it was very relevant. He was actually from New Zealand, so I don't know how often he went home to visit his parents, but every time he would come over to my father, he would ask him a question about the dateline. He would fit the dateline into everything. Every shiloh that one could ever imagine somehow ended up being a shiloh in the dateline. And I always used to get so dizzy listening, but the truth is, these questions really are very important questions with regard to many areas of halacha. And here as well, this is not a dateline issue, but it's the same kind of point. How can you have a person who's just going to jump cities back and forth and decide that he's going to bypass the whole obligation of Purim, meanwhile you really haven't fulfilled any of your obligation that you really had? So now let's go a little bit further. 3 lines into the wide lines, 4 lines in, says the Gemara Masnisin, Deloki Haitana. Our Mishnah is not like this Tana. Detanya, Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha Omer, Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha Zavi the opinion. Krachin ha-mukafin choma mimos achashverosh, Korin bechamisha asa. So why is that not like our Mishnah? Our Mishnah said the only city that's considered to be a walled city is the city that had a wall already in the days of Yeshua ben Nun. But now we have a Tana that says, Rabbi Shulman Karcha argues, no, what's considered a walled city with regard to the mitzvah of Purim has nothing to do with Yeshua ben Nun. How did he come into the picture? Doesn't make sense. Why should he have to do with the equation? The equation should be about that which took place at the time of the miracle of Purim. And therefore, it should be based on where there were walled cities in the days of Achashverosh and where there were not. What do I care if at the time that Yeshua ben Nun conquered Eretz Yisrael, there happened to be a wall around the city or not? Why is that relevant to the story of Purim? And therefore, he's of the opinion that the way that we demarcate whether or not a city is considered a walled city or not is based on the fact whether or not it had a wall at the times of Achashverosh, at the times of the Purim story. Otherwise, it's irrelevant. So that's what the Gemara says. Seems to be a machlokas between Rabbi Shulman Karcha and our Mishnah. Says the Gemara as follows, Masnisin de lo kiatana, detani, Rabbi Shulman Karcha omer, krachin amukaf and choma mimos achashverosh. The defining criterion for whether something is going to be, someone told me last week I made a mistake. Did I say it last week in this year? I said criterion. This person corrected me and said it's criteria. So the defining criteria, I made the same mistake twice in a row. The defining criteria for whether you are considered a city that is a walled city with regard to the mitzvah Mikra Megillah is whether or not at the time of Achashverosh it had a wall or at the time of Yeshua ben Nun it had a wall. That's the machlokas between our Mishnah. My time at Rabbi Shimon Karcha, why does he say that it's dependent on the times of Achashverosh? Makes a lot of sense. Kishushan. Because after all, the whole miracle happened in the days of Shushan Abira. And therefore he says, Ma Shushan mekefas choma, mimos Achashverosh, just like the city of Shushan was a walled city in the days of Achashverosh, not in the days of Yeshua ben Nun, so too, Havkoshu mekefas choma, mimos Achashverosh, kor mechamisha asar. And from there we draw the conclusion that any city that was walled, any city that was walled, thank you, in the days of Achashverosh, are the ones that are considered to be walled cities. But anything that's not, is not. Mitana Didan, why does our Mishnah say that the criteria is based on whether or not it was walled in the days of Yeshua ben Nun, my time, what is his rationale? Says the Gemara, Yalif, Prazi, Prazi. He learns out, Xeris Shava, Prazi, Prazi. Over here in Megillas Esther, we use the word Are HaPrazim. And where else do we have the word Prazi? So the Gemara says, we have the word Prazi when Yeshua ben Nun was going to conquer the land of Eretz Yisrael, it says the word Prazi. So therefore, anytime it says Prozim, it means it's like Yeshua ben Nun. It's like a very far-fetched conclusion. But that's the Gzeirah Shavah that he had. And we know that Gzeirah Shavahs have to be learned b'mesorah. So obviously he had this down from a tradition from his Rabbeim. And that's why he learns out Praze, Praze, Ksiv Hacha, because it says over here in our Pasuk by Mikra Megillah, Al-Kein Ayuhudim ha-Prozim, Uksiv Hasam, and it says, with regard to Yeshua ben Nun, when the Torah says Moshe Rabbeinu is telling him exactly which cities he should conquer, which cities he shouldn't. So we're told over there, Levad me'ari ha'prazi har b'miyot. Ma la'alan mukefes chomi m'yos Yeshua ben Nun. Just like over there, when we're talking, the conversation between Moshe Rabbeinu and Yeshua ben Nun is talking about that which was taking place in his generation. Afkan, so to over here, mukefes chomi m'yos Yeshua ben Nun. So the Gemara says that we learn from Yeshua ben Nun what the definition is of a walled city, and therefore we decide over here that the only thing that's called a walled city is something that was walled already in the days of Yeshua ben Nun. And then the Gemara goes back and forth about whether or not we should learn the Gzeirah Shavah, or maybe we shouldn't learn the Gzeirah Shavah, and which one makes more sense, which one perhaps makes less sense. But finally, let's skip down a little bit instead of going through all the complicated back and forth. The Gemara says in the end of this, the following, and this is a very important line. Says the Gemara about 7 or 8 lines from the end. Rabbi Shimon Levi, Da'asa, Da'am Rabbi Shimon Levi. You see it? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 6 lines from the bottom. Da'am Rabbi Shimon Levi. Rabbi Shimon Levi taught us, Krach v'chal ha-samach lo v'chal ha-nira imo. Any city that is considered a walled city, but not only a walled city, also any city which is samuch v'nira, any city which is close enough to the walled city, and also is nira, you can see the walled city from there. Now, we discussed a couple of weeks ago when we started the Masechta, exactly how do you define what is called samuch, and how do you define what is called nira? Do you need both of those criterion? Now we're talking about 2 things, so we'll say the word. Do you need both of those? Both has to be samuch and nira? Or is it just that samuch is one criteria, or nira? Either one of those is enough to say that you're considered an extension of the walled city. That's a major question that we discussed. And this is why it's very, very difficult, as we mentioned a number of weeks ago, it's very difficult nowadays to really determine what is considered to be an extension of Yerushalayim and what perhaps is not. Let's say you have the community of Ramot. So you stand in Ramot and you're able to see Yerushalayim. But really, is it close enough to be considered an extension? What?
Right, because it's like a mountain.
Right, there's a mountain in between, but at the same time, it's just one highway that goes from one to the other. You can certainly see it. So it's certainly nearer, but it's not so samuch. And that's the question, how exactly do we determine what exactly would make something into an extension of a walled city and what perhaps would not? That's a very difficult question, but here our Gemara gives us what exactly the line that should be drawn to be considered nira. Let's say, samuch. What if you have a community that is close to the walled city? How close is considered to be close? How close is considered to be close? So says the Gemara, the answer is, Amar Rab Yirmiya v'itemer Rab Chia bar Abba, Kimei Chamson l'Tiveria. Like the distance from the city Chamson to Tiberia. Now that means nothing to us, because we don't really know what any of those places are. So the Gemara says, and that is a mil. That is a mil. So now the Gemara asks, Falema mil, why don't you just say it in simpler terms? Don't tell me from this city to that one, just say the length of a mil. Says the Gemara, no. HaKamash Malan is teaching us the Shiura de Mil Kamahavi. The Gemara is coming to teach us how much exactly is a mil. Now, knowing how much a mil is a very important halacha to be aware of, because it has ramifications for many areas of halacha if we know exactly what the definition of a mil actually is. Let's say one very important example is We know that you have to make matzah in a very specific way in order for them to be kosher to be used on Pesach. Now, how do we know what is the difference between matzah that was kneaded in a way that is going to make it chametz and matzah that was kneaded in a way which is going to allow it to be eaten on Pesach? A very fine line between the two. Using the same ingredients, you're doing the same thing, baking in the same oven, so how do you know whether it's chametz or matzah? So the general assumption is, the Shulchan Aruch and Siman Taf Nun Tes, Hilchos Pesach says, that if you have batzek, if you have the dough that was munach, that was sitting alone by itself without his askus, without it being worked on, without it being baked, without it being kneaded, for the time that it takes to walk a meal, then we assume it becomes chametz. But if all along you were working with it, and it never sat along for more than a meal, so then we assume it cannot become chametz. Now,
It's so arbitrary on so many levels.
It sounds very arbitrary, but it comes out a big kula, by the way, which we generally are not makel on. We have matzahs that are made 18-minute matzahs. We don't really need to do that. We're machmer today, we make matzahs that are all started to finish, out of the oven within 18 minutes. That's not what the Gemara says. The qualification that we have in order for matzah to be kosher is that the dough didn't sit unattended or not being worked on for more than 18 minutes. It doesn't say that from start to finish of the process it has to be 18 minutes. So we are super machmir, and we say you have to make sure that we have the matzahs starting of the process until the process is all done has to be within 18 minutes. That's a tremendous chumrah. But in Shulchan Aruch proper, it really doesn't say that. The Shulchan Aruch itself just writes, you can have it being worked on all day long. You can have people beating it and rolling it out and doing everything to it. As long as it's not sitting around without his askus for 18 minutes, it wouldn't be considered to be chametz. And that is a very important place in which we find that a meal would be a determining factor. Let's say for tefillah as well. There's a major question exactly, how far does a person have to go in order to make it for tefillah in the Beis HaKnesses? So it happens to be, let's say the last maror we have here is 11 o'clock. I can go to Far Rockaway and I can get a minyan until 12 o'clock, 12:30. Well, am I obligated to go 15 minutes in that direction, 15 minutes back? Is it something I really have to do? Or perhaps you'll say, look, it's 11 o'clock at night, I'm not mechuyev. How far does a person have to go for a minyan? That's a major question. And this also, in Shulchan Aruch, we're told, is based on the determination of a meal, that a person has to know how far a meal is and how far one is obligated to go. The Gemara says you're mechuyev to go dalad milim. You're really mechuyev to go 4 mil in order to make the minyan in order to daven in a shul. What? So the Gemara says it depends. If it's forward or backwards, is it going to set you off track too far or not? But the question is, what if I'm bebeso? What if I'm sitting in my house? So I'm not on a trip at all. It's not going to send me in the right direction or the wrong direction. All directions that I'm going to go now are the wrong place because I would like to go to sleep. So the question that the Mishnah Berurah raises is, how do we determine how far one is obligated to go when it comes to a person who has to daven in shul and realizes they haven't yet daven marv? Another question that is determined based on a meal is by the rule of netilas yadayim. So we know we have a takana midirabanan that every time before somebody eats bread, you have to make sure to wash your hands. And the question is, well, how much do I need to go out of my way to wash my hands? So today it's very easy. You can either go into your house or into an apartment building or into a store. You can always find a place where you can wash your hands. But in the times of Chazal, it wasn't always so simple to find flowing water that you're able to use in order to wash your hands, and it wasn't such an easy thing to do. So over there as well, the Gemara gives some sort of shear that we assume to be 4 milin, that a person has to be willing to go out of their way up to 4 mil in order that they should be able to wash their hands before having the bread. But more than that, we're not expecting anybody to do. So that's a very important determining factor, exactly how long is a meal. Now, our Gemara says over here that a meal is the amount of time that it takes to get from Chamsan to Tiberia. Now, as we know, we don't really understand exactly how much that measurement is or how little it is. So how do we determine exactly what a meal is? That's a very important question. So we look at a Gemara, Maseches Pesachim. I forgot to give it out, but the Gemara says in Maseches Pesachim, Daf Tzadi Gimel Amid Beis. And there, the reason why the Gemara is talking about it is, how far does one have to go in order to shech the Karban Pesach? Right? So one is supposed to do whatever they can to get to Yerushalayim in time, but what if I'm simply not able to? What qualifies me to be able to bring a Karban Pesach on Pesach Sheni? At what point do you say, look, I was an honest, I was too far away, I couldn't make it to the Beis HaMikdash, and I was Bederech Rechoka. The Pasuk says, if you're Bederech Rechoka, you have a right to bring your carbon on Pesach Sheni. So there the Gemara says, it depends how far you are from Yerushalayim on Erev Pesach in the morning. So the Gemara tells us the following. Mahalech Adam B'yom Arba'im Milim. The Gemara says that we have a calculation, we have an assumption that a person is able to walk in one day 40 mil. Now, one day means a halachic day. So a halachic day, in perfect terms, is going to be a 12-hour day. So now, if you're able to walk in 12 hours, you're able to walk 40 mil, what does that mean? It means in 1 hour you can walk how much?
Three and a third,
exactly. 3 1/3 mil you can walk in 1 hour, in one halachic hour. So the question is, well, where does that leave us? Right? If it's a, anybody know math? So if you can do a 12-hour day, you can walk 40 mil, which means in 1 hour you can walk 3 1/3 mil. So then how much time does it take you to walk 1 mil?
18 minutes.
Oh, so that's why some say it must be 18 minutes, because if you do the math, it's about 18 minutes. Now, for some reason, the Rambam, in one place in the Pirush HaMishnayos and Maseches Brachos, writes, this is 18 minutes. And another place, the Rambam says, it's 24 minutes. So what happened? How did he get 24 minutes? If you do the math, it turns out to be less than 24 minutes. So the answer has to be that it depends when you start the 12-hour day. How many minutes are in each hour? Right? Does the day start from...
Summer hours.
First of all, summer hours and winter hours are going to be calculated differently. And secondly, do you start counting the day from Alos HaShachar or from Netzach Hama? Do you start counting from when the sun is totally on the horizon in the sky or from earlier? And when do you end the day? Do you end the day at Shkia or at Tzeis HaKochavim? Based on all those factors is going to really depend how you make the determination here of what is considered to be the proper calculation of a meal. And this is why the halacha we find a major discrepancy. There are some shitas who say 24 minutes, which means it's a big kula with regard to Pesach. Why? Because it means I can leave my matzah unattended for 24 minutes and it's not going to be chametz. But I'm not willing to take a risk on an Issur Karis. So that's why we don't generally follow that. We generally follow the rule that 18 minutes is the determining factor. There are some who say maybe 22 and a half minutes. It's not clear. It's a very uncomfortable issue because when you look in the Gemara in a number of places, both here and in Maseches Pesachim, tells us this is exactly how you define how long it takes a person to walk a mil. But the answer is we don't really have a precise measure of really understanding how much it takes to walk a mil. And this is why we find in some places people write, I shouldn't say people, the Rambam himself writes 18 minutes, and in other places the Rambam writes 24, which leaves us for a major question, exactly how do we determine what exactly is considered the amount of time that it takes to walk a mil. And as we mentioned, it has many ramifications, la halacha, not only here with regard to samuch, when a person is going to be considered a ben krach, or a ben ir, but on the other hand, with regard to matzah, and with regard to netilas sudaim, and pas akum, the Gemara says a number of things, we would consider a meal to be a very important shear that a person really has to be aware of. And generally we assume that 18 minutes lahachmir, that's generally what we try to do with regard to Pesach. But as we mentioned, it's a very unclear issue. So Amir Hashem, next we will continue. We have a very important sugya coming up, all about Menatzpach, all about the letters that have the sophis, right? You have Mem, Nun, Tzadi, Pei, and Chaf. We'll talk about that next week. Amir Hashem, Beis, Amid Beis.